everybody, and welcome to another episode of Tales from a Vet Tech with me, Tabitha Kucera. Today, I have the pleasure of talking to one of my good friends, Liz Wainick, all about our insecurities. Good times, right? All about our insecurities that held us back, especially as baby technicians when we were first joining the field. And Liz really struggled with this as well as I did. And she shares her story about not only how she addressed those insecurities, but actually overcame them. And there's a happy ending, spoiler alert. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode. Hi, Liz. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi. Thanks for having me, Tabitha.
So me and Liz have been friends for a very long time. And the other day we were just casually talking at dinner and we were talking about how Liz has really overcame her insecurities, not just with work, but other things in her life, but especially as a veterinary technician. And then we started talking about how a lot of our insecurities held us back when we were baby techs, which we define as the first year or two after getting out of technician school and passing your boards. It's not a bad term. It's just you're less experienced. So When we were baby techs, we were kind of looking back and being like, oh, our insecurities held us back a lot. And we were less able to take risks and we were more likely to settle and be uncomfortable. So I was like, oh, this is a great topic because I'm sure many other people have dealt with this as well. So I figured I'd bring you on because you're awesome and to share your stories and how we overcame those insecurities. So happy ending, right?
Yes. Yeah. Happy ending.
Happy ending. So to start, do you want to just tell us a little bit about your career path and where you are today?
Yeah. So I have been a technician, registered technician for over 10 years now. So I like to use the term geriatric technician now.
5 years is the research. So we have overcame that. And I know, shout out to all my vet med and shelter med fam who has been doing this for 10 plus years.
Yes.
We appreciate you. Geriatric, as Liz says.
So I started out, I kind of hopped around different GPs for the first, majority, I should say, of my career up until a couple of years back. Trying again, I've always struggled with insecurities and confidence in general, social anxiety, all of that fun mental health stuff. and so my career path was no different. I did well enough in tech school, but again, like, you know, there's book smart and there's street smart, and I was keenly aware of that, just as much as my classmates were, that maybe weren't doing as well in class but they're still in the field too, and they're rock star techs too. So if you're in school and you're struggling, don't let that bog you down. You can still be a rock star tech when you get out in the field. Side note. But I always struggled with insecurity and confidence in myself. And I kind of, at the beginning of my career, when I was a baby tech, looking back, I kind of was setting myself up for failure almost, because I was seeking out these clinics that I thought maybe I could kind of like dip my toe into the field, maybe not as fast paced as some other clinics in the area, to try and get my feet wet, as it were. I'm gonna try and build that confidence, but I was not the greatest at looking out for red flags. I know, Tabitha, you and I have discussed this many times. When you are going out on interviews, you are interviewing the clinic just as much as they are interviewing you.
Right.
And I never understood that for the longest time. I was just trying to get jobs anywhere I could. And I was not very choosy in the beginning. A job was a job.
And you were seeking, like you mentioned, you were kind of seeking hospitals that were maybe a little bit smaller, that were fairly slow, and that in many of the cases at these clinics that you worked at happened to not utilize their technicians correctly at all. Yeah. So,
yeah. And also, again, you know, again, being a geriatric tech, you bring up the point, this was like long before the talk of title protection and title unity and all of this great discussion that's going on right now. Yeah, so it was no big thing in a clinic size to just throw the word tech around regardless of credential status, and throw the word tech around without any real knowledge of job duties, what a credential tech can do, is capable of doing. And so a lot of the jobs I was finding myself in, I mean, I would do some technical skills here and there, but I really was not being utilized as a registered tech should be. And so that actually, it didn't really, obviously, if you're not building your skills because you're not being utilized properly, not really going to build your confidence, because you're not building your skills.
Right. And you're not in a situation where, in many cases, you were the only registered veterinary technician. So I've felt this before too. I may be the most, even as I started to learn more, if I'm the only RVT on staff and I'm still newer to the field, that can be concerning. And like you said, mm-hmm. kind of setting us up for failure, because mm-hmm. we really need to strengthen our skills. And if the person that we have to go to strengthen our skills is only ourselves, that can be, not only can that be difficult as far as your self-confidence, but also you could be doing the wrong thing over and over again because you don't have mentorship or support or a more experienced person showing you. And I think both of us, which I'm sure many of us have out there, a lot of us have experience working in an environment, whether it's a shelter, a vet clinic, or a training facility, where you may have not had an environment that was conducive to learning. And like you were kind of just thrown into the thing, like, you got this, go monitor anesthesia and with a difficult, like with a patient with a lot of comorbidities and things that you were not necessarily comfortable with. And many of us don't learn well being thrown into the fire, as they say, or we learn, but as you can imagine, it's not the best to learn in most cases.
Just thinking back to some of the first few clinics I bounced around at, the one I had to like ask them, like, are you gonna give me a 90-day review? Like, am I getting a 90-day review?
Just and wanted to like, check in. I would love some feedback so I can grow.
Like, back, like 90-day review. What is this? Oh, I guess. Let's step into this room and talk for 30 seconds. Completely like.
You're doing great. No criteria, no helpful feedback. Yeah. Good job. Or you're doing a bad job and no helpful criteria or feedback. Both of those things happen.
Yes. So as listener, as you can imagine, by that scenario, a very true scenario that happened to me, I was, again, not very good at picking out non-toxic work environments, so not being utilized properly, and then really bad at picking out work environments that were not toxic, both actually worked to not only not remove any insecurities, but actually made me less confident in my career choice. And I actually ended up taking a year off out of vet med, and I started working at a boarding facility, a kennel, doggy daycare, which is where you and I met. Mm-hmm. I had been working there for a year, and then out of the blue, one of these clinics that I had you know, driving around in ye olden days, just blanket dumping resume cover letters at different vet hospitals. One of these clinics that I had dropped off a resume and cover letter to, again, over a year ago, had reached out wanting to set up an interview. And so I interviewed and I got a job there. And it was great. It was great for a while. It ended up not being great at the end. But things happen. But it was good. It was a good job in that that was kind of where I started to, because there was a technician there that had been working in that clinic for 15 to 20 years at that point in time. And she started as an assistant, went to tech school, was credentialed. So I actually, for the first time in my career, had like a mentor at my job. I was not the most senior technician anymore.
Right.
Which again, this is like 2 years into my career path, which again, like seeking out, I'm trying to build my confidence as a veterinary technician. Probably, maybe don't pick clinics within your first couple of years where you are then the senior technician. Probably not going to work out great to build your confidence.
Right. Like at the interview process, you know, ask those questions. What do opportunities for advancement look like here? What is your CE allowance?
Yeah. Ask how many credentialed technicians are working there. How many assistants, how many RVT, well, in Ohio, they're RVTs.
Right.
How many RVT students or CVT, LVT, wherever, whatever state you live in. But yeah, so that was, I mean, that was refreshing. And that was actually where I was being utilized as a technician more often. And I was actually able to like hone my tech skills, my phlebotomy skills, surgery, anesthesia monitoring. And again, I had that mentor there to kind of help teach me and help kind of guide me along. And she was actually a really good mentor. Another thing is we like to eat our young in this field. We should not do that, because little baby technician me, if I had been paired up with a mentor that ate her young, I don't know if I would have actually survived.
I would not define that person as a mentor. But if that's true. The way, air quotes. Yeah. The whole, like, we're going to, what is it called when fraternity haze you? Like the whole, like, we're going to be mean to you to make sure you, we're going to make you cry five times. Cause I've had more than one job where I've been made to purposely someone made me cry. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't eat your young in the clinic. But no, so that was actually a really good experience. And then towards the end, it did get a little bit, stuff was happening and it ended up, I found myself not working there anymore. And so then I kind of bounced around a few more clinics again, trying to find that good clinic that would have like that same feel with the mentor and,
utilization, you know, and support.
Yeah. And I landed a job at this clinic that was a good practice. They, you know, do practice good medicine. But when I got hired there, I applied for an RVT position. And when they hired me, again, still, this is like, you know, several years into my career at this point. And I was more confident, and I was getting better at being choosy with clinics, but I still wasn't quite there at picking out red flags. I also was like, you know, still really not confident enough to ask like quote unquote hard hitting questions. They're not even that hard hitting.
Just basic interview questions, yeah, but also
pay scale and CE allowance and this, that, and the other, which again, you're interviewing them as much as they're interviewing you. You have every right to know like all of that information, because too, you don't want to waste your time. You don't want to waste their time. If you know up front that there's these deal breakers then you don't have to waste anyone's time. But anyway, so I applied for an RVT position. I interviewed, it went well. I got the position and like I went in to like, you know, sign all the stuff and, you know, orientation, quote unquote. It wasn't really orientation. I don't know why I use that word. But they were like, oh, by the way, you're going to make this much an hour, which at the time was the average uncredentialed assistant, like with less than 5 years experience in the field. And I'm like, okay, I guess that's fine. I need a job.
Yeah.
And so I was working there and I don't know why they listed it as an RVT position because they were paying me like an assistant and then I was being essentially not utilized. I was not getting any surgery time. I was not helping in the back with any of the nursing care for any of the hospitalized patients. I was just helping restrain for wellness appointments and vaccines, which is, yes, in GP, that's a big part of GP, but so is spaying and neutering and dentals and all that other stuff and blood draws and like all of this stuff that frees up doctor time. And so I was getting frustrated and I had been
understandably
there, yeah. I had been there for about 6 months and there was a day where we were finishing up for the day. We were like on our last appointment for the day. And the vet that owned the practice had been working on the floor that day, seeing appointments. And he had been not like belligerent or mean or anything, but just like more critical about what I was doing all day and critiquing me and you know, making sure I was minding my P's and Q's with everything. And as he was leaving for the night, he looked at me and he said, you know, Liz, you did a really good job today. And I'm sorry for giving you a hard time all day, which to his credit, thank you for apologizing. But he's like, I'm sorry for giving you a hard time all day, but I see a lot of potential in you that you could be a really good tech. And at the time when he said that comment to me, I had my license as a registered veterinary technician for 5 years. And I had been working in the field for four because, again, I took that year off.
And to be fair, when you were working at that facility, you were still doing tech work.
Assistant stuff, uncredentialed technician stuff.
Yeah.
So like, you see a lot of potential in me. First of all, thank you. But also, I'm already a great tech. What do you mean?
Yeah, you were probably just like, oh, okay. And then you sat back for a second and you're like, the fuck?
It was kind of like a deer in the headlights. Oh, thanks. And as he like walked away you went home for the night, I'm like, that's kind of a backhanded comment.
Right.
But yeah, so no, but then to your point, I'm like, but then also like, I'm not even being you. Like, what do you mean you see potential in me?
You have given me zero opportunity to grow. Yeah.
And it was it's so funny because that was like, and I still was not as confident then as I am now in my career, but it's so funny because that was like as soon as the thought came into my mind, I'm like, oh, this is a different person than I was 5 years ago. Because what do you mean I'm already a good technician? I'm like, oh, I'm confident in myself. Yay.
it was like a turning point for you. When you took a break from vet med and you're like, I don't know if this is for me. And then that
really
happened
in that year off.
Yeah.
And then just a few short years later, just to have that complete 180 in mindset. And so obviously that job did not work out. So then I did eventually find another GP that I worked at for several years, and was able to get, you know, even more confident, hone my skills even more anesthesia experience, learn more. I had a mentor. It was great. And then, you know, as you and I, we love going to CE. We love going to lectures, webinars. Hashtag never stop learning. If GP is what you are all about, that's great. That's fantastic. I became one of the head surgery, go-to surgery techs where I worked. I got really bored of spays, neuters, and dentals, like an occasional splenectomy, an occasional lateral suture for an ACL.
And this is what I love, because I have been friends with Liz for a while and I've seen her confidence grow and I'm so proud of her and she's amazing. But anyways, I remember we were chatting and she's like, yeah, she's like, I really want to, which to be fair, we should be utilizing CRIs and a lot of these other things in GP, but she's like, I want to start like learning those tech. Cause if you've never, if CRIs are fairly inexpensive and can be easy to learn, but if you've never done it, it is very mind boggling, especially, you know, I know for me personally, and even line blocks and
where I work now, they have it all like calculated into an Excel spreadsheet. It's fantastic. So you don't have to do any scary math, because I'm not a mathy person.
And who doesn't love a double check? We love it. But you went to your boss and you said, hey, and I love that you did this. You started the conversation. Because again, they you were having good experiences there, but you felt stuck, as many veterinary professionals do, because that whole opportunity for growth thing somehow gets just skipped quite a lot by management and practice managers and owners. And you were like, I want to learn more. I want to start doing, I mean, ideally, we should all be doing testicular blocks and line blocks for space. But anyways, you're like, I want to start being the person that does that. I want to start doing this. And you express the want to learn more. And obviously you already had a relationship. You proved that you were a skilled technician and wanted to continue to learn more. And their response was not what you anticipated.
I was kind of poo-pooed. And I was like, oh, well, okay. I tried. So that was like coming towards the end of my time at that hospital, because again, like I've maxed out on what I can do. I am a very non-confrontational person. I don't want to hire and fire people. I don't want to be in charge of like managing people. I would be a terrible manager.
And that's okay. We can't all be good at everything.
Right? So, and know your strengths. I would not be good in an administrative role. I would be terrible. Speaking of red flags, if you ever interview at a clinic and I'm in an admin role, run the other direction. That'll never happen, because I will never accept that job. So I was feeling stuck. And so I went out on a limb and did something completely uncharacteristic of myself. And I applied to as a surgery RVT for a big ER referral practice in my area. And I got an interview. I went to the interview. The interview went really well. I seemed to hit it off with the head tech for the department really well. I was feeling really hopeful. This was about March 7th of 2020.
A few weeks before.
I'm not sure if you all remember. Something else happened in March of 2020. a week after my fantastic interview that I was so hopeful, I got a call from the girl that interviewed me and was like, you know, there was a hiring freeze at the hospital, and she apologized. And as soon as she, you know, she would keep my resume on file. As soon as things opened up, you know, she would keep me in mind and stuff like that, and this, that, and the other. And I was bummed. But again, for me too, I was like, oh, now no one knows what's going on, so I might as well just stick here for a little while.
Right. Yeah. That was a definitely obviously a very new thing.
I know,
many of us. So
the first couple of months it was touch and go. First couple of months, fast forward to, you know, summertime, early to midsummer, while I come to work, and my good friend and coworker We were really good friends at work.
Her work wife, everybody, is what we say in VetMed. We love our work wives and our work husbands.
And she actually was, going back to the talk about how I don't want admin roles, she got hired after me, but they promoted her to be like a tech liaison position. And at first she was like really nervous to tell me. It was really funny. I was in the lab the one day and the practice manager came up to her and like whispered something to her, like all hush hush. And like they had been like pulling her aside into meetings and stuff more frequently. And so the practice manager walks away and it's just me and my friend there in the lab. And I'm like, are they making you like the head tech or something? And she's like, yeah. And you could tell she was really worried about how I was going to react because I was more senior than she was. And I was like, good, because I don't want it. But no, so she was the tech liaison. And it was like, it was really nice because, I mean, every hospital is going to have their management problems. The management problems that was happening at that hospital at the time were just becoming more and more frustrating for me. But because my friend had this tech liaison position, it was wonderful for me because I could just air my grievances to her. And then it's like off into the ether and if it'll get taken care of, or if it doesn't get taken care of, that's not okay. But at least they hear about my complaint. So it's good to have that until that person in that role leaves, which is what my friend did. So I had this great interview in March of 2020, fast forward a couple months into the summer of 2020. And my friend broke the news, that she had put in her notice, and it had gotten a job at the hospital that I had, interviewed at back in March, not in the same department that I interviewed at, in a different department. But she got a job at that hospital. And I immediately was like, one, I cannot deal with the management at this hospital without this person.
That buffer and that support. Yeah.
And two, well, the hiring freeze must be up. So I went home and I pulled up Indeed and I just applied to every open position at this hospital. And the very next day or the day after, I was contacted to come in to interview for a position. And I was like, well, ask, do you want to work on the ER floor? Do you want to work in the ICU? And again, completely out of character, I was like, I can work in the ICU. So they hired me. I was now an ICU RVT at this huge, like, ER referral specialty practice. Like, oh my goodness, it was bananagrams. And if you because the thing is, I look back to where I was at the beginning of when I was graduating tech school. And if you told that person that, just you wait, Liz, one day you're going to be working in the ICU of a very busy ER referral practice at the height of a global pandemic when everything is bananas. I would have laughed in your face because I was not confident. And it's amazing how far I'd come in my confidence. And since then, you know, I've transferred from the ICU because it was great. But after a year, I was definitely burned out.
Yeah, it's a lot.
ER, I mean, people that love ECC. And
shout out. We love you.
I know. Continue to do it in the midst of everything that's going on right now.
Yeah.
I just love you all so much. And so, I put in a transfer. And now I work for the cardiology department. And I feel like I've been there for a year in cardiology. And I finally feel like I have found my niche. Like, I love cardio. Cardio is so cool. If you are in tech school, cardio is amazing. It's, everything is interconnected. Like, I'm not, I know I'm going on a tangent, nothing to do with.
But you found your, I mean, I think that's a really big part of growing, finding your niche, finding what you like, and then you're more passionate, which means you're happier at work, but also it's just, it's a good fit all around. And it took you a while to get there, and your path, all of it was relevant and helpful.
Yeah.
And it brought you to a place where you're like, where you, we joke and call them unicorn clinics, which is very sad because unicorns don't exist. You guys get it. You guys get
it. Unicorn clinics can exist.
No, they can. You found your happy place, right?
Yeah. And it's so funny because, like, going back to, like, if you had told, you know, little old me graduating from tech school in 2010, again, geriatric technician, if you had told me, going back to that, if you had told me when I was graduating tech school way back in 2010 that I would work in the ICU department of this huge, busy
and be very, very good at it, by the way.
Oh, thank you. and then not only that, but then transfer and go work for and probably even busier cardiology, but maybe not even busier. Our emergency department is slammed all the time.
Yeah.
But an equally busy cardiology department. Again, I would have been like, you have no, like, no, you're, that's not me. But here's the thing, that person back then, yeah, that's not me anymore. I am a different person. And I'm so much more confident in my abilities as a technician, both like my technical skills, my knowledge base. Yeah. So I don't know hard and fast, like, how to overcome insecurities that are holding you back. It's hard. It's hard, man. And I still struggle with it. I still have social anxiety and insecurities and confidence issues. But I think I was so scared for so long I was sabotaging myself, self-sabotaging myself, because I was trying to set myself up for clinics where I couldn't thrive and I couldn't learn. And I was trying to do that under the guise of, like, you know, just dipping my toe in the water. But I was picking out clinics that were not good environments to learn in.
And then it got to the point where you actually were like, maybe I suck.
Questioning.
Yeah, which you don't suck, but you were in so many of those situations where you were like, and I tell this to a lot of people that work in shelter med and veterinarians and veterinary technicians and veterinary assistants, like, guys, I know that you think that this is normal, but this is not normal. Like, first off, we're changing the normal in our field by advocating for ourselves. But also, when you work in those places, because to be fair, I thought a lot of some things that are, now that I'm older and have more experience and have worked at clinics where I was supported and were appropriate, healthy work environments, that, like, oh, like, you're, I mean, this isn't normal. This is not how every place is. Cause I hear so many people say, and I get it's hard. I hear so many people say, I at least know how the shit is here. So I know it's shit, but I know what it, and familiarity and predictability obviously are helpful things, but they'll say things like, I know how it is here. It's going to be worse or the same anywhere else. So why bother? Yeah. And I get that learned helplessness. Like, I really empathize with that. But guys, even if we're interviewing, like Liz said, and we're starting to ask, like, see allowance or what are the opportunities for me to grow? Like, for example, a lot of the clinics I worked at before leaving GP, I was like, I'm going to implement fear-free and low-stress handling at your practice. This is what that's going to look like. I'm going to implement, we're going to start a kitten kindergarten and puppy socialization. And I mentioned my goals as a technician and what I needed from them, which is helpful, like, as far as what certifications I want and things like that, and how they, vet practices love that. But then I noticed that they would love that. And I thought I was very clear. And then there was some kind of like how you, that interview you had, which I love that you brought it up, because now you're like, that's, I was hired. We didn't even talk about pay. And then they essentially,
I know. And I'm like looking back and I'm like,
but I get it. We've all been there.
What's wrong with me that I didn't even think to ask?
You were just not confident and felt very, you probably felt very conflicted in an interview process, which is why I think practicing is really important with your friends and your colleagues. Right.
And I should say, I look back and say what was wrong with me. I also forgive past me.
Yes.
For making that mistake. Because also remember, that was the same clinic where I had that light bulb aha moment when the guy was like, you have all this potential. And I'm like, what do you mean? I'm already a great tech. Yeah. It all worked out in the end, I guess.
No. And I think I've had some bad experiences. I've worked with some misogynists. People and other things that again happen in every field. But now when I reflect back, I'm like, I'm a better educator. I'm more empathetic. And I think both me and you and a lot of other animal professionals I know, we know what we went through and we don't want, that should not be the base, which unfortunately I feel like it was the baseline. And like Liz said, although we still have a long way to go, we focus on the positive and we're getting there. We're starting conversations. And I've talked about this with a lot of other techs on my podcast. Me and Melody talked about this a lot, but she was saying something that I really found relatable, and she's 100% right. She didn't even realize that what the capabilities of techs, right? So for example, I didn't know about VTSs until, oh gosh, like I didn't hear about that at tech school, which I find bizarre. But anyways, why are we not talking about that, guys? I didn't learn about vet tech specialties and all of these other amazing opportunities or even being like, if I don't want to work in GP, I can do this, this, and this and be amazing at it. Or I could be in GP and head the nutrition counseling. I mean, there's so many things, but none of us thought that this was, if you never saw it, and you never heard about it. Like you said, those conversations were not happening. And this is one positive social media, because that's a love-hate thing too. Mm-hmm. But we weren't aware. We didn't know. We thought that was the way it was.
Yeah.
And thankfully, we're starting to share our stories and tell everybody, hey, you're awesome. You don't, if you hate it here, there are other opportunities, or you can try to make a change, or even at the interview process, if they maybe stare at you sillily or body language changes to tense when you ask about CE allowance and opportunities for growth, maybe that's not a good fit for you, but you practice your interview skills and you planted a seed in that practice owner's brain.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, yes. And circling back to like the confidence and the insecurities and stuff. Yeah. Those questions, that'll help you suss out clinics that will help you gain confidence, because if the hospital is not like, if it's not a environment that promotes learning. So ask about CE, ask about lunch and learns. Do they do lunch and learns?
Yeah. That's an easy way to just start getting, because obviously we can't know for sure all the time, but there are helpful questions that we can ask to get a vibe for sure.
And ask that question. How many credential techs? How many assistants? Your most senior technician, how long has she worked here for? How long, like, I mean, I guess maybe not ask that, but like, you know, trying to figure out like, is there someone here that can be a mentor to me? What's the environment like as far as promoting learning, because that's what's going to build your confidence and help with the insecurities you're having as a baby tech. Being in an environment where you are allowed to learn, you are allowed to make mistakes here and there,
because we're all human and that should happen.
Yes.
When those happen, we should talk through it in a kind and professional way and not talk shit behind that person's back. Sorry.
Yes. No, yeah.
So they can grow and all of us can grow from that mistake.
So yeah, I feel like when I was in tech school, I still am. I mean, you kind of have to be in this field, a little bit cynical and jaded. But I say this knowing fully well that I probably would not have taken this class seriously if it was offered in tech school. But they really should have a class about like interview skills and, you know, what to ask on an interview. And I mean, we had like a class about like writing, how to write a resume and a cover letter and, you know, like proper etiquette, like always send a thank you after an interview.
And those things are important, but let's be honest, guys, I can Google that shit.
Right.
I mean, I'm not saying it's not important, but that is something that I can, because I have to learn the skill set years ago, and ask colleagues, like my husband doesn't work in the veterinary field. And I had him help me make a resume like years and years ago, and other colleagues from other friends from other fields. So, but as far as like those interview skills, besides if you could practice with your friend, but like you said, these are things that both me and Liz, I didn't start asking until, oh gosh, because I was working in animal welfare before I went to tech school. And when I met Liz, I was a manager at that dog and cat boarding facility while I was in tech school. So I was working in animal welfare for quite a long time. And I didn't start asking questions or even like you said, realizing, hey, this is a us process, like interview me and I interview them. And it's not, if I'm not a good fit, it doesn't mean that they're a bad practice. It just means that they may not. Again, there's so many contributing factors to that, but I wouldn't have thought to ask so many questions. And because of that, I think both of us put ourselves in really ethical, compromising, traumatic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And although, like you said, I think I am thankful for those opportunities and those experiences, because it's I love who I am today. And I know that that contributes to it. But also, if we can help people avoid those...
I will say all of my little hiccups along the way definitely helped me figure out, well, that was a red flag that I missed.
Yeah. Now it's funny, because I have so many. One day we'll share them, guys. Because I'm sure many of your red flags are similar to ours, because no matter what state or country you are in, there are similar red flags. But, and again, I think, like you said, I love that as a field we're starting to talk about this stuff. So if you're someone, because you may only have accessibility to online learning and not be able to travel, that's the other thing, like that CE online learning platforms are starting to really make things more accessible for everybody. And we're starting to talk about, hey, veterinarian, hey, technician, hey, assistant, this is not normal, and your mental health matters. And it's, you don't just shrug off not eating lunch for you guys. I worked so much yesterday. This is super. If I sound tired, but I worked, and this is my own fault. I work for myself. Yes, I do. But I also have, as you guys know, we are workaholics. I love my job, but I had a crazy scheduled day, and I was like, I'm going to plan ahead and bring food. I didn't. So I ate a piece of cinnamon raisin toast at like 8 a.m. and I got home from consults and meetings, and again at like 10:30, I almost passed out. And I had one cup of water and one cup of coffee. And I've been eating a lot better, like for a while now, because I had to break that whole eating a large meal tech life thing. Like this morning when I woke up, I texted my personal trainer. I was like, "Girl, I'm here for you, but I just want to give you a heads up. I feel rough. And so we're going to just work out tomorrow." And I had to rest. Ugh. I mean, rest is really good. excuse that. Ugh. I'm working on it. Hey guys, ignore the ugh. But I was like, no wonder I felt like shit all the time when I was like, I would work 14-hour days and not eat. And I'm like, what? Again, perspective, right? Like, and that was normalized in our field. Like, you're an asshole if you eat food. And you're like, no, I'm not saying that's everywhere. These are generalizations from me and Liz's experiences, but that's like,
well, yeah, it's kind of, cause it's, and again, that's like, I talk to people at work and stuff, like you should take your vacations, this, that, and the other. Don't worry about leaving your coworkers in a lurch, cause you want to know something. If they don't have enough staff for adequate coverage when one person is out, that's not a you problem. That's a management problem. And so don't put that on you. Don't put that on you. And so don't put that on you, and don't put that on your coworkers either. Like, don't be all pissy and snippy because, you know, Amanda, Jesse, whatever. I'm trying to think of common girls' names. Baby Jessica, you and I, we were born in the 80s. So, you know, that they take their lunch break, or, they went on vacation. They took their vacation, and now we're down a tech for a week, and it's going to be a miserable week. Like
that vacation is allotted, and we should plan ahead for that.
It's not okay, but your behavior that's redirected aggression.
No, it's so funny because humans and animals learn the same, and as everyone knows, my niche is behavior, and I left general practice to do full-time behavior consulting and consulting with veterinary clinics and shelters and all this awesome cool stuff. Mm-hmm. And the amount of things now that I understand behavior that, again, I'm not justifying the actions of those things, but I can recognize where some underlying things contribute. Like you said, it's redirected aggression. A lot of people, blood sugar is, again, now that I understand more, because yesterday I was like, oh, I'm going to feel like crap yesterday. And I knew I should have known. Duh. My husband's like, you're dehydrated, dude. Like, duh. You feel like shit. And I was like, I know this. And I still was surprised. Why do I feel like crap today? But I think, and that's another thing, like as far as vet med, like I know that this is, there are complex issues, but a lot of these things, we're not really looking at the, just like with behavior, right? We have to look at the core issue. Mm-hmm. Management prevent that issue while we identify triggers, which this could be triggers to vet techs quitting or not being able to keep vets or a shelter not being able to keep staff. And for some reason, none of that, even though those things are, even without journal tracking, pattern tracking, for example, what I do with my animal clients, mm-hmm. it's very obvious to why these things, like why vet techs aren't staying in, or why, and it's not, hey guys, spoiler alert, it's not because people don't want to work. But yeah, it's we're going on a tangent. But I think Liz brings up a lot of good points that we both, because of insecurities and other things, we kind of, I love the way you said it. That's a word, guys. Self-sabotage yourself. And I think a lot of us self-sabotage ourselves. And again, perspective looking back and the amount that you have grown, not, I mean, of course you're an amazing technician, but the amount you've grown as a person and have been able to, of course, advocate for your patients, but advocate for yourself has been wonderful. And seeing you in a place that you're happy and supported and learning and thriving is just from a friend perspective, but also as a colleague, it's just beautiful. And I really thank you for sharing your story and getting a little vulnerable like we do on this podcast.
Yeah. Hashtag social anxiety. You're welcome.
He was a little nervous and I'm like, you're just talking to your best friend. Like, let's just cash. It's super cash. Shake it out.
How many people are listening to this episode? Certainly. It's great. It's great.
It's everything just me and you. This is why podcasts are great. And I would say if you had to give one piece of advice to your colleagues, what would it be regarding kind of some of the stuff we were talking about today?
I mean, definitely in general, something that I have learned over the course of my career thus far, with all that setting myself up for failure, whether I was consciously aware of it or not, we're supposed to be advocates for our patients, but we're supposed to advocate for ourselves too. I mean, it's stupid cliche Hallmark card. You can't pour from an empty cup. So you definitely have to advocate for yourself. But then again, going back to the topic at hand from the aspect of overcoming insecurities and gaining confidence, it's definitely trying to find that environment, whether it's GP, private practice, whether it's, you know, in like a university setting or anything like that, an environment that allows you and actually encourages you, not just allows, it's not the right word. You want someone that is encouraging and happy for you to learn, and to better yourself, your technician skills, your prospects as a tech in this field. Your employer should be having your best interests at hand just as much as, you know, their clients and their patients. Because really, I mean, it's not really any secret.
Yeah.
about employee retention. If your employees hate coming to work, they're going to stop coming to work. So yeah, don't be afraid to ask those quote unquote hard hitting questions about CE and this, that, and the other to determine, you know, where is that, what clinic is that going to be? You know, is this a good environment for me to learn at? You know, I've only been out of tech school, you know, a year or 2 years, or like, you know, the place I work at now is considered a teaching hospital. So we actually have tuition reimbursement for RVT students, which is amazing.
Love it.
I know a lot of clinics out there don't have the resources for that. But, you know, if you're interviewing at a huge facility, that's something else you can ask about. And if it's a really huge facility that has all those resources, well, why aren't they encouraging their assistants to go to tech school then? You know?
Yeah, we should definitely reflect on that for sure. And then I think also, even as assistants, you want to grow in your in your career, just like technicians do. And you have a lot of opportunities. And this applies to CSRs, because I've seen similar things happen to all parts of the staff.
If you want to be cross-trained and do some assistant work in the back, like I do not want to be a CSR. I would not be great at it.
We love you, CSRs.
again, I don't want to manage people, and don't make me receptionist full time. I would not be good at it. But those CSRs that want to get cross-trained and help in the back, like, oh my gosh, as an RVT, that's amazing. That's because it's another set of hands.
It is a big bummer. I mean, I know we need CE for our license, and so do veterinarians. But as someone that works with a lot of amazing shelter professionals who have very minimum access to learning from someone who is skilled, they're kind of thrown into things, or so many amazing shelter professionals I know who want to learn more so much and are actually somewhat punished for it sometimes. I understand that a CSR doesn't have a license. Some do, because there's different when it comes to management, mm-hmm. and that a shelter staff member may not have a license. But the fact that we don't feel as a field that it's important for them to have CE is mind-boggling to me. It's just, so again, the struggle is real. And in kind of with what Liz was saying, let's say you work at a shelter or a vet clinic where you may not feel very supported, or you feel like this environment may not be what we were kind of talking about, conducive to learning. What you could do as management in the meantime, find a support outside of work. So for example, I'll be honest, I have so many amazing colleagues and mentors now. I am so thankful. I'm going to get all emotional. I am so thankful for all the people I learned from. Me and Liz nerd out and we'll just talk about a case, and we're from completely different parts of the field, but mm-hmm. again, very, very helpful information. And Liz was one of those people for me. When we were working at stressful places, we had, of course, like family, friends as a support system, but that's why I love going to conferences so much. You meet people who understand what you're going through, who empathize with what you're going through, and you can learn from each other. So even if you can't get that from your practice right now, because we understand that that's not everywhere, I definitely would recommend seeking out colleagues, joining some of your local technician groups, if possible, to change the field, but also to meet other people so you guys can grow and learn together and you can have that support system, because that support system, Liz included, has got me through quite a lot of fun and sad situations. So thank you so much, Liz, for being here. And I know I said one last question.
Okay.
What is something that makes you happy right now? It could be Liz has an amazing cat, both amazing cats.
Oh, yeah.
Cliff cat and Tyra. Heathcliff has an Instagram, and I will share it on the page so you guys can all follow him. He's a beautiful orange, handsome man. And Tyra's a beautiful senior grade girl. But anyways, I'm getting sidetracked with your cats. Eva. What is something that makes you happy?
So, you already know about this, but I'm gonna say it again for all of the listeners. I had mentioned that where I currently work is a teaching hospital. So as part of that, we have every summer, we get a new group of the small animal rotating interns that come in. And we had an intern on our service, the cardiology service, last week that, just talking back and forth. And he was like, oh yeah, the beginning of lockdown, I started a crochet. I taught myself how to crochet. And I, let me show you some of these little amigurumis I made, like a little like antelope and stuff. And they're so cute. And talking about my pets, and Tabitha had mentioned my two lovely cats. I also like turtles. I have a box turtle and I have a Russian tortoise. And so I was talking to this intern and he's talking and he was like, oh, have you ever seen those crochet sweaters for turtles and tortoises? And I'm like, have I seen them? Only like for the past like 5 years. I wish I could crochet. So he offered to make me a little sweater for my Russian tortoise little foot, and I'm super duper excited. And it's gonna look like, he's like, I found a pattern that looks like the little like turtles from Super Mario Brothers.
Oh my gosh, I am so excited to see it. And what a kind gift from him. Oh, he's awesome. That is wonderful.
So yes, that's one thing that's bringing me joy in my life currently.
Well, thank you so much for being here, Liz, and keep up the amazing work with all them hearts.
Oh, thank you. Keep up the amazing work with all the behavior.
Thank you. Thank you to everyone for listening. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast, share the podcast, tell a friend about it. And I would appreciate if you rate and review this podcast, so it shows up for more people to find and listen to. I appreciate everyone's support. And again, thanks for listening, everybody.